walking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop.
Do you have your Christmas tree rocking the living room already? What kind did you get? If not, do you plan to get out and pick your own Christmas tree from one of Wisconsin's Christmas tree farms this weekend or a nearby lot? We'll have some advice on picking out and caring for the perfect Christmas tree this hour. And we'll welcome your questions, favorite types of Christmas trees, memories of getting and decorating your Christmas tree, and we hope you'll share with us your questions and your traditions. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, December 13th. And our guest Christmas tree expert will also have some safety issues to keep in mind. So we welcome your calls at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on our Facebook page, that's The Joy Cardine Show, or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Cheryl Nicholson, Executive Secretary of the Wisconsin Christmas Tree Producers Association. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Merry Christmas to you.
And yes, and to you too.
Is this the most wonderfully busy time of the year for you?
Oh, it's pretty crazy busy for the growers especially. They've been getting, you know, all the trees cut and shipped, and the wholesalers now maybe have a little break. But the retailers and the choose and cut farms, they're going strong still.
Yeah, I was wondering. I'll have to admit that I don't have a Christmas tree this year. I haven't had one for many years, in part because I've had cats and dogs, and I have cats and dogs that interfered with the Christmas tree and the ornaments. But it was always a real tree for me growing up, and that's what you hope more and more people still pick the real tree, right?
We do hope that. Yeah, we know that it's good for the environment, especially.
Why is it good for the environment?
Well, you know, the farmers are growing the trees, and as plants grow, they're producing oxygen that we breathe, of course, and in the end, trees are all recyclable. They go back and decompose and feed the earth again.
Should we feel bad that we're killing a tree, though, just for a week?
No, it's not killing them for that, because they're growing them as a crop, like pumpkins or cut flowers or even Indian corn. You know, you grow it as a crop and then you replant. And the growers are planting two or three trees for every one they cut. So, you know, it's on a farm, it's in rows, and they take care of them, and it's a constant cycle.
Have the real Christmas trees taken a hit from the fake ones?
We do have, see that our sales go up and down. You know, some years we do a little better, some years the artificial tree does a little better. But there are a lot of people that still go with tradition. You know, if they grew up with the real tree, they tend to always come back to that, even if they get away from it for a little bit. You know, so we're kind of holding steady.
Yeah, and especially in Wisconsin, I would think, too, with such a German heritage, if I remember correctly, the history of the Christmas tree is a German tradition.
Yeah, I've read that, too. It's interesting to read different snippets about, you know, the origin of the Christmas tree and bringing it into the home, and I've seen different versions of it, too.
Well, give us a scope of how important the Christmas tree industry is to Wisconsin. How big is it?
Well, we've got over 1,100 Christmas tree farms in the state, and we are rated number 5 in the number of trees that are cut across the United States. You know, so we do have a lot of growers. Almost 1 million trees are harvested each year, and you know, on tree farming, it's very labor-intensive, so you have a lot of people that get part-time jobs throughout the year to work on the farms.
Yeah, and it's a year-long business. More than that, you're constantly doing things to grow and care for these trees.
Yes, It definitely is year-long. You know, when the spring comes, of course, the growers are going to go out and plant, but even right now, you know, they're doing sales, but then they've got their taxes and their bookwork, and then they got machinery that they got to fix up for next year, and you know, work in the shop throughout the cold months, and then in the spring, they'll go out and plant the trees. You know, as soon as the ground gets thawed out, they'll get those trees in the ground, and then it's constantly watching for disease and insects, and, you know, when the grass grows, you got to mow, and each year the trees are sheared, so, you know, they have to, you know, it takes a lot of labor. That's a hand job, basically. You got to go to every tree and trim it so it keeps a nice shape. You know, it's just constantly throughout the summer there seems to be something to do.
And most of the trees that are on the lots now were harvested, last month?
Usually towards the end of October mm-hmm. is when they start, depending on the weather. You know, it's got to be cold enough. It usually, they say it should freeze, a really good hard freeze, so the trees go dormant. And then they'll cut. And once they're cut, they wrap them. Either they wrap them in twine or they wrap them in a, you know, plastic Rexar wrap. And then that brings the branches in real tight. And it's like taking a wet rag and you tie it in a knot and it seems to never dry out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what the wrapping the trees, it helps keep their moisture in, and then they're stacked in piles. So keeps them really fresh and cool by doing that.
And how many approximately cut your own tree farms are there?
I can't tell you. I don't know.
But there are many where, in most regions of the state, where we can go cut our own?
Yeah, we've got members across the state, and, you know, I'm aware of those members that, you know, almost every county would have a cut-your-own, or I guess maybe not almost every, maybe 75% of the counties you could find a cut-your-own farm. You know, you might have to search a little bit. Some of them, a lot of farms in Wisconsin are less than 10 acres, so you might have to do a little research in your area to find those smaller farms because they may not advertise very much or very far.
Yeah, I do remember doing that as a kid. Not every year, but many years, we would go out somewhere in the Fox River Valley area and cut our own Christmas tree, and that was a lovely tradition where the whole family could kind of wander around and pick out the perfect tree. But do you have some tips as to what makes the perfect tree?
Oh, I think the perfect tree is in the eye of the beholder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people like tall, skinny, open. Some people like really dense trees. You know, I used to like really dense trees. You can't see through them. And then one year I had one that was more open, and I'm like, oh, this isn't so bad. I got more room to hang ornaments, and, you know, it
mm-hmm.
just kind of gave it a different look. You know, some people like the short needle, and some people like the long needle. So it varies, and that's the nature of everything.
I like the ones that smell like Christmas, that smell like evergreen. What is that kind?
The balsam fir is very common, and it's native to Wisconsin. So I think maybe people associate the smell of that to the smell of Christmas, you know, like when you get a pine candle or something like
mm-hmm.
that. Maybe that's that smell, or it's a mixture of evergreen smells. And, you know, every tree is interesting because they all have a different aroma. And I can identify, if I walk out in a field, I'm like, oh, I know what that is, you know, because I'm around them more often. You know, you can just smell the tree, especially in the spring. You can smell the Scotch pine when they start to pollinate. It's like, oh, that's a Scotch pine, you know.
Oh.
So you associate, you can tell the difference if you're familiar with it.
But the balsam fir is a native tree.
It is.
Oh, okay.
Wisconsin, and the white pine is also.
Yeah, that might also be there. I know that they were a lot of those up north.
Yes. Mm.
We are talking about Christmas trees, and we're wondering what kind of Christmas tree you picked out this year or what kind you plan to get. What questions you have about Christmas trees, what traditions you have when it comes to picking out your Christmas tree. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with Cheryl Nicholson, Executive Secretary of the Wisconsin Christmas Tree Producers Association. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Boy, are you stupid, Charlie Brown.
What kind of a tree is that?
You are supposed to get a good tree. Can't you even tell a good tree from a poor tree?
I told you we'd goof it up.
So do you usually pick out a Charlie Brown Christmas tree or the biggest, greenest, most spectacular tree you can find on the lot? What makes a Christmas tree a perfect Christmas tree for you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking about picking out our Christmas trees, learning some about the Christmas tree industry in Wisconsin, and we'll get some tips on how to care for it once it's home. And we, again, welcome your traditions and your memories, too, about Christmas trees. We are talking with Cheryl Nicholson. She is Executive Secretary of the Wisconsin Christmas Tree Producers Association. And we have many callers, so let's go right to the phones. Paul in Trempealeau is with us. Hello, Paul.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hey, we have my family has had a Christmas tree farm for 50 years this year.
Wonderful. Well, happy anniversary.
Well, yeah, it's very nice. And, you know, Dad's still around to see it. So I was just kind of thinking, I bet you're used to the balsam fir smell because that's probably the most commonly cut tree. And I just wanted to say that it's so nice to have people patronize to cut your own farms year after year. We have fourth generation people coming to the farm, so it's really it's a fantastic way to spend the holidays watching people come and cut the trees. It becomes quite a tradition for a lot of families.
Well, Paul, what's the name of your Christmas tree farm?
The Lamke Tree Farm.
And it's in Trempealeau.
In Trempealeau, yes.
So what happens if we would come to your Christmas tree farm to cut our own?
Well, we point you in the right direction. We have white pine, spruce, balsam, and Fraser fir. So we point you in the right direction and give you a saw, and off you go into the woods and march around a little bit and hopefully come back with the perfect tree. And as your guest said, the beauty is in the eye of the beholder, certainly, with the trees. Everybody is looking for something different. And so many people, when they come back, say, I can't believe anybody will be able to go out and find the perfect tree because we have it. But that seems not to be the case. So.
And what kind do you have for your own house, Paul?
We cut a Fraser fir. It's between the Fraser and balsam. They seem to hold their needles the best, and we keep our tree up for quite a long time, from after Thanksgiving and generally through the whole Christmas season, so through the Epiphany. So it almost starts to grow in my house. It's been there so long.
Well, I thank you so much for calling, Paul. We appreciate it. And
you have a wonderful show, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I did note on some reading I did, Cheryl, that other Christmas tree farms where you've cut your own, some of them have different activities and hay rides and this and that, so trying to make it a real holiday experience for people.
Yes, there are some farms that do that because, you know, people like to go, consumers like to go and have fun and make a day of it or at least a few hours of it, and to be able to go into a little area where it's warm, maybe there's a fire or a bonfire, and have some hot chocolate, and maybe if you're lucky enough, you get to have a ride on a horse and wagon, and it makes a real fun day for the kids.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about caring for our trees and keeping them, making sure they last and they're safe and all that. But we have a caller who has a question along those lines, so let's go to Braden in Washburn. Hi, Braden.
Do Orchfields really keep Christmas trees fresh?
What a good question, Braden. How old are you?
7.
And that's wonderful. Do you have your Christmas tree already, Braden?
Yes.
Good. Did you decorate it already?
Uh-huh.
Oh, wonderful. And do you have some orange peels in the water?
Mm-hmm.
So does that help, Cheryl?
We say that all you need is fresh water because the trees out when they're growing in the field, they're just taking up water and they're taking nutrients from the soil and that's carried through the water. So basically, you only need to water the tree with water. You don't need to add anything.
But the orange might smell nice.
It would smell great.
Yes. Put some cloves in there, too. That's wonderful. All right, so that's all we need to do is just make sure we have water in the tree stand?
That's the important part, yes.
Yeah, and how long should that tree last?
Well, you know, through at least the Christmas season, you know, 3 to 4 weeks I think people have their tree up sometimes, and I know I've had mine up, you know, that long, and it's usually not a problem keeping it that long. You know, depending on the year, how the trees grew outside, you know, they may be more stressed if it's been really dry outside, so they may not last quite as long. You know, maybe once Christmas gets here and you think, oh, maybe I should take it out. It looks like it's getting a little dry. Then just take it out. You know, if it still looks great, you want to keep it up another week or two, then leave it up.
Yeah, and then put it out and let the birds have fun in it for the winter. Or I know that in Madison, they'll pick it up and compost it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like to set mine out where I feed the birds. Just prop it up against the post. And I'm amazed how the birds will use that. They'll come fly into that tree and then up to the feeder and back. They use that a lot, you know, which I didn't realize until I had done that. So, yeah, they do like it for shelter.
A listener emails, last week I went to a local tree farmer looking for a balsam. The owner said the drought of 2012 wiped out thousands of their balsams. Are balsams more susceptible to drought and disease than other firs? What does climate change mean for Christmas tree production?
Depending on where the trees are grown, you know, it's not necessarily just balsam being susceptible. You know, any trees, any plants are susceptible to drought, you know, the lack of rain. So when we had in 2012 and even 2013 in part of the state, you know, like in southern part of the state, it was really hot and dry for 4 or 5 weeks. We didn't get rain. And that even did some killing damage to the small trees that were planted last year. So if it's, you know, drought conditions or even flood conditions have the same problem. You know, you have trees dying because it's just extreme weather.
Oh, so because of that, are Christmas tree prices up this year?
No, because we're looking at a crop that's 10 years long. You know, we plant trees now, and it's going to take 8 to 10 years to get them to the height that we would sell them. So, you know, the growers are planning all of that into their financial picture, and, you know, the prices of trees is pretty stable. It doesn't fluctuate a lot. So that, you know, it doesn't affect the price this year.
Yeah. So there's not necessarily a shortage of balsams out there.
No, not typically that either, because trees are easily moved, even across the United States. If one grower doesn't have enough trees, they may buy from another grower just to get the trees they need. So trees are transported pretty easily and, you know, bought and sold between the growers so that they'll have enough in the location that they're going to sell trees.
Let's go to Karen in Sturtevant now. Hi, Karen. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. I love your show, and I just wanted to let you know that. And
Thank you.
Question was, when you take a live Christmas tree home, can you replant it?
Well, if you buy one that has the roots attached, you can plant it in the spring. The trick is not having it in the house very long. You know, I think they've said about a week in the house is all that it can tolerate, because you put it in where it's warm and it's going to think it's spring and it's going to want to grow. So, you know, put it in the house a short period of time, even maybe in a really cool spot, maybe on a porch, and then after Christmas, then set it out where it's cold. I don't think you want to put it out in the snow and the ice outside, you know, necessarily. It's a really touchy thing. The people at the university and the Michigan State University have looked into it, but I don't think they've come up with a really great solution on being able to bring that tree that's bald and burlapped, you know, or potted into the house and then take it back out and plant it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Karen, for the call. Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard of doing that, but some people want the roots on them, Cheryl.
Yeah, and there are a couple growers, you know, our members that sell potted trees,
okay.
So people can do that. But you just have to not let it get too warm because you don't want it to think it's spring.
Jim in Green Bay is with us. Hello, Jim.
Hi there. Good morning.
Morning. You have an interesting tradition. Tell us about it.
I do. When I was very small, we started doing the the cut-your-own trees, and we would send all the kids, myself and all the other little kids, to go find a tree that had a bird's nest in it.
And would you always find one?
We were pretty lucky. Even though a lot of the tree farms, they're pretty assiduous at getting those out of there. They try to pick them up because they don't apparently look pretty, I guess. But we always felt that if it was good enough to be some little bird's house, then it was good enough to be in mine.
Yeah, and then did you keep the nest on the tree after with all the decorations?
Oh yeah, we used to put little Christmas bulbs in the nest, you know, put like a little glass ball in the nest or whatever, and then put the tree out by the bird feeder for the rest of the spring.
How great! That's wonderful.
That sounds like a good scavenger hunt for the kids. I bet they love that.
That's a great idea. Well, thanks very much for sharing that. We are talking about Christmas trees with Cheryl Nicholson, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Christmas Tree Producers Association. This is the time of year where we go on the search for the perfect Christmas tree. We're talking about what to look for when picking out a tree, and we're welcoming your questions, and we're welcoming your traditions, your memories. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:36 on this Friday, December 13th. We'll continue talking about the perfect Christmas tree, your perfect Christmas tree, and taking your calls, your questions, and memories in just a few minutes. But first, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Winter officially starts next weekend. It's a season that invites strong feelings among Wisconsinites. Writer Christy Clancy tells us about her own ambivalence to this time of year.
Like a dieter thinking about the new year, I think about the approaching winter and make plans for how I'll deal with it. I'll be honest. What I really want to do is curl up in my flannel sheets and come out of hibernation when the lilacs are in bloom. But since that's not an option, I tell myself this will be the winter that I'll get out there so much that my blood will get as thick as petroleum jelly. I'll go for brisk walks in my sleeping bag coat and suck up vitamin D through my face. I'll use the skis in my garage that are getting brittle from disuse. I'll try to be more like the crazy people I know and envy who don't mind and even relish the cold. My brother-in-law could spend all day in hockey skates clearing snow off a frozen lake with a broom to make a gigantic skating rink. I know cross-country skiers and snowshoers who can't wait to put on their ultralight down jackets and head outdoors as soon as the snow falls. I have cycling friends who stud their bike tires and clean road salt out of their derailleurs when they get home. For them, winter is the best season. They sleep with their window open a crack. They find beauty in the snow on the branches, the low, clear light, and the sight of their breath suspended in air in front of them. Don't these icicle huggers know that winter is supposed to be unlovable, punishing, dangerous? Jack Frost kills his victims by covering them with snow. Exposed to the elements for too long, our digits can turn blue and fall off. Winter means a search for the missing glove, slipping on black ice, clearing crud off our windshields with the edge of a credit card, that gross dampness on your wool scarf after it's been on your mouth, the mushroomy smell of boots and wind like rocks in your face. Winter lovers will tell you that it's all about having the right gear. I wish it were that simple. I'm one of those people who think of cold as a form of pain. What I love about winter isn't the cold, but the way I protect myself from it. I like the contrast the bitterness creates between warmth, like sea salt on dark chocolate. When I try to think about what I love about winter, I think of soup on the stove, my favorite sweater, curling up on a couch with a down throw and a book. I think of hot chocolate and fires and steaming radiators. I think I could handle winter better if it didn't stick around so long. But I reach a point when the snow turns to dirty slush, my happy lamp stops working, and the heating bill could be mistaken for a college tuition invoice. Winter's okay until I hate it, and it gets ugly when I cross that line. Something that could happen in a matter of months, weeks, or days. But for now, the season of fender benders and broken hips has just begun, and I'm cautiously optimistic.
I'm with you, Christy. Christy Clancy teaches English at Beloit College. Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. This episode was produced in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. For more information, visit our website at wisconsinlife.org and find us on Facebook. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Maybe Christy should get out and cut down her own Christmas tree this weekend and enjoy this winter weather. By the way, we're going to be talking about winter weather, coping with winter weather, enjoying winter weather, driving in winter weather coming up on Monday morning between 6 and 7. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. What is your tradition when it comes to your Christmas tree? Do you get it from a Christmas tree farm? Do you cut your own? Is this a family affair? How do you decorate it? What kind of evergreen do you choose and why? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on our Facebook page at The Joy Cardine Show. Talking with Cheryl Nicholson, Executive Secretary of the Wisconsin Christmas Tree Producers Association. And our next caller is Kelly in Shorewood. Kelly, thanks so much for waiting. You're on the air.
Yes. I just wanted to share. My husband, Mark, and I, for the past 19 years, always go to a Christmas Story type of lot to find the worst tree on the lot, the Charlie Brown tree. And we've had trees without tops, without whole sides. We even one year bought a tree, and when we brought it to the cashier, the guy asked if we wanted a different one because it was in such bad shape. And when we said no, he proceeded with, well, I'm going to give you a discount. Can I give you a discount? And my dear, sweet husband said, oh, no, sir, this tree is worth just as much as all the other trees here on the lot.
Oh.
And the guy was in stitches. And the funny thing is that once we trim it and once we decorate it, it absolutely looks no different than I guess what you would call a normal Christmas tree.
I think that's great. So how did that start? Why did you decide to pick the worst looking tree on the lot?
You know what? It's been 19 years, and I don't know if I could tell you the exact reason. It was just one of those things where, you know, we're looking at all these trees, and everyone's trying to get the best tree, and then we felt, you know, bad for the tree that never got picked. And then we thought, well, we're going to pick the tree that no one will ever pick because it deserves a home.
Oh, I love that. The misfit tree finds a home. And
yeah.
And as you say, once you decorate it, it still looks really, really nice. That's wonderful. What a great story, Kelly. Cheryl, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that is fun. You know, I've seen pictures, photos of people that have done that. On one farm, they got the last concolor fir. You know, they always liked the concolor, and the farm was running out of them, and they found that one last one that was still there, and it was a really rough looking tree, but once it was decorated, they sent a photo, and it was really beautiful.
That's great. Michael posted a photo on our Facebook page. You can do that too. It'd be great to see more Christmas trees, decorated Christmas tree photos on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And he wrote, "My father and I were clearing a trail on his land, and we cut down this spruce tree. It's a spruce. The top looked pretty good and natural, but a bit Charlie Brown-like. As a joke, Dad said, want a Christmas tree? It now graces our living room." So I guess you can cut one down on your own property, too, if you want to. But it does look a little Charlie Brown-like, but very pretty. Thank you for posting that, Michael. Let's see. Bob in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Bob.
Hi, Joy. Like to ask your guest if she would rank trees from the most desirable down to the ones that people seem to like the least on the Christmas tree lots, at least here in Wisconsin.
Well, that's, again, to give us an idea of what's out there, maybe in terms of popularity. Cheryl.
Yeah, there. You know, that's kind of a loaded question, especially after we were just talking about this great Charlie Brown-looking tree. But there is, you know, the number of trees that are cut. You know, balsam fir is still pretty high on the list. And the Fraser fir
is pretty high on the list. You know, they're very popular trees. I think people, you know, they like the short needled, so they go for that. The spruces, which are short needled but very picky and sharp and they don't hold up as well, are less common than they used to be, you know, 40 years ago. Because 40 years ago, the spruce was native to Wisconsin, and that was what we had, so that was what was cut. And then you get the pines, which are long-needled. White pine is native, and it's really soft, soft needle. Scotch pine, we started planting, like, in the 70s, early 70s, I think. And that was really sharp-needled, but long-needled. So the Scotch pine is not as popular. There are a few out there still. And the white pine, there's people that love the white pine. So I guess what it comes down to is what you see on the tree lots is mostly balsam fir, freesia fir, and a little bit of the other things mixed in.
Yeah, what were the kind, I remember ones that had really long needles, but they were very soft.
Probably the white pine.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we had that a lot, too.
Mm-hmm. That's a tree from my youth that I remember, and I'd like to see more of those. Those are great trees and real easy to hang ornaments on. We tried Scotch pine for a few years, and they're so terribly dense. You can put lights on them, but they're hard to hang ornaments on. So that's just my comment.
Yeah, and in fact, Bob, you I think we used to call it the Norway pine, too. That's what you called it.
Right.
Yeah, the Norway pine, because I guess, you know, that's used now. It's also called red pine. That's used as timber. And so that was grown originally as the long-needled, and you couldn't shear those so tight as you could the Scotch, you know, so you actually had more openings in the branching and in the growth. But those, you won't find hardly any of those. I do know some growers that have a few, you know. Yeah. You may cut 25 a year because it's just not as common.
So the Norway pine is not another name for the white pine. I had that confused.
Nope. Okay. Norway and red pine are the same thing.
Okay.
And Norway actually is really long, 6-7 inch needles. The white pine is more 3-5 inch needles.
Yeah. We are talking about Christmas trees, different kinds of Christmas trees, our Christmas tree traditions. What kind of Christmas tree do you pick each year? Or what's your tradition for picking a Christmas tree? Do you go to a lot and cut one down? Do you have a Christmas tree farm? We heard from one earlier, a caller earlier this hour, who has a Christmas tree farm. You can call in and let us know. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I've been to Allen's Grove, Emerald Grove, Cedar Grove, Union Grove, Soldiers Grove, Hales Corners, Slades Corners, Abel's Corners, Newber Corners, Pipersville, Pittsville, Deansville, Reeseville, Janesville, Platteville, Orphanville, Fortville, Blanchville, Plainville, Plainfield, Nutterville, Butternut.
I've been over there, hey, smell that dairy air, hey.
This is a Christmas tree edition of Tell Joy Where to Go. This is the hour each week that we celebrate Wisconsin life and we talk about something special about Wisconsin. Today we're talking about Christmas trees and the Christmas tree industry. It's a pretty big deal in Wisconsin. Our guest says that we're fifth in the nation in Christmas tree production, and it is a special tradition here in Wisconsin, and we're wondering what that tradition is for you. We're talking about finding and caring for the perfect Christmas tree. And where do you find your Christmas trees? Do you go to a cut-your-own farm? Let us know. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is the Executive Secretary of the Wisconsin Christmas Tree Producers Association, Cheryl Nicholson. And our next caller is Dory in Appleton. Hello, Dory.
Hi, good morning. How are you doing, Joy?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I wanted to call and let you know that you said that you've never heard of anybody successfully planting a Christmas tree, and I've done that before. When I lived in Madison, we had a house with a really big deck, and so we bought live Christmas trees, and we kept them out on the deck. And you have to dig the hole in advance so you know where you're going to plant it in the yard. And then you have to really protect the ball underneath the tree. So we, like, got bales of hay and wrapped bales of hay around it. And we decorated the tree, and it was just right outside of our great big patio doors. So it was beautiful there. And then after Christmas was over, we put it into a hole in the yard and made sure that it was covered with dirt and protected the roots again with a lot of straw or hay, and it did fine.
Wow, that's great. That's good to hear, because then somebody else could do the same thing.
Yeah, you just have to be really careful not to get it exposed to a lot of wind or anything so that you, like, freeze the roots. And you have to have the hole already dug, because trying to dig a hole in Wisconsin in after Christmas is not a good idea.
Yeah, smart idea. Thank you very much, Dory. Well, that's interesting. Do you decorate that tree now?
It was really fun to decorate it. We had to try and think about, we did things for the birds. Of course, we put, like, popcorn and cranberry chains on it. And then we had to think about which ornaments would be okay to use outside, because a lot of my family traditional ornaments were glass things that I wouldn't use.
Oh yeah.
But we had a lot of fun with it when my kids were small.
Thanks very much. That's right. You said this was when you were in Madison, now you're in Appleton. Well, that's a cute tradition. What kind of tree do you have in your house, Cheryl?
Well, typically a Fraser fir. You know, I used to like the balsam fir, but then when we got Frasers growing commonly here, then I switched over to that. I like the aroma of it, and it holds up really well.
Mm-hmm. And any special thoughts about safety once the tree is at home?
Well, once you bring it in, you know, you want to make a fresh cut. If the tree's been cut for a while, you know, if you cut it and then put it in the garage, because make at least a quarter inch fresh cut on the bottom of the trunk, because that'll allow it to take up water once you put it in the stand. Keep it away from, you know, really hot fireplaces and heaters, and even out of a sunny window, because those types of things would dry it out faster and, you know, steal the moisture out of it. And then once you've got it up, you know, check your lights, make sure your lights are all safe to use. You know, the fires start usually with a faulty electrical problem, and that's what you want to avoid. So make sure you have good lights, and then only use the lights when you're there at home. Don't leave them on all the time. You know, when you're gone or when you go to bed, turn the lights off. And then make sure you water your tree every day. You know, the first couple days or even the first week, it might take up a lot. You'll have to water it twice a day, and then it might level out after that. So just watch the water level and keep it watered.
And no lighted candles on the tree.
No, not a good idea.
Any tips on keeping cats out of trees?
Well, you know, I've heard people say they love the spruce because the spruce is sharp and pricky, and the cats don't like that.
There we go. I never thought of that.
I'll keep the cat out. Otherwise, you know, I don't know. They just love to play in it. You know, it's a challenge, I guess.
Yeah. Let's go to Mary in Pewaukee next. Hello, Mary.
Yes, good morning. Merry Christmas to everyone, Joy and listeners. And what we did this year is my husband had a great idea to decorate our planted, like, a 6-foot potted oleander, and it looks great. And thank you also for all these memories that you're bringing back to all the listeners.
Well, and why did,
a lot of fun.
That sounds like a unique Christmas tree, Mary, but have you, yeah. Is there a reason why you decided not to get a traditional tree?
Well, my husband came up with the idea, and we were saving money, and we already had the big oleander in a portion of the house that it would look wonderful, and it does.
Yeah,
it's really great.
Thanks very much for sharing that. I guess you can go that route too.
Yeah.
Mary was saying too that she had a real tree growing up, but then they went to a fake tree. So I knew some families that did that too.
Mm-hmm.
Roy in Stevens Point. Hi, Roy.
Hi, how you doing? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
I'm a transplanted Wisconsiner. I grew up in South Carolina, and we use cedar trees. So as a kid, I never understood the shape of the traditional tree, because the cedar is a much different shape. Plus, my my brother-in-law has a tree farm up in Ringle, and there's certain trees, if you're allergic, the Douglas fir, I think, is the one that you can get that you don't have as many allergies to.
I guess I never thought of that. Are there certain trees that are more hypoallergenic than others, Cheryl?
Well, I don't know specifically, but it's interesting for him to say that. Because some people do have a problem with that. And a lot of times it might be, you know, the dust on the tree. It's not the tree itself. So, depending on the allergy and what mm-hmm. people are susceptible to. But, you know, it's interesting when he says they had a cedar. And to me, that's the opposite, because I've seen, you know, in Alabama that they grow a lot of cedar trees as Christmas trees. And I'm thinking, how would you decorate a cedar tree, you know?
What is the shape of a cedar tree? I'm not even sure.
It grows upward, but it doesn't have the branches protruding, you know, more horizontally.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I don't think it's mm-hmm. just a different type of decorating. I think maybe I'm thinking of the tree outside my house that, you know, a lot of people use for landscaping. It, you don't have as much branching to use, and it's a little bit softer, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Roy, for that. Becky in Portage is with us. Hello, Becky.
Hi. I want to know about the concolor fir. I've seen it mentioned now as a Christmas tree. What's it like, and do you like it?
The concolor is also called white fir, and it has a real citrus type of aroma. We do have growers that have it, and you know, if you're on our website, you can look at the Cut Your Own Farms, and you can see the varieties that they have. So you could search for that on those. So they do make their way to the retail lots. Also, it's a little bit longer needle than a Fraser or a balsam fir. You know, I'm saying, you know, maybe it's an inch and a half long, maybe 2 inches at the most. It varies, you know, all the trees vary. But its growth pattern, it grows really slow, so it's a little harder to grow, mm-hmm. you know, for the Christmas tree growers. It's a little bit of a challenge sometimes, and different soils and things affect it, too. So it's not as common, but you do find it a little bit.
Well, thanks, Becky, for that question. And Cheryl, thank you so much for joining us. We'll put your website up on our website or our Facebook page so people can check out the various Christmas tree producers around the state. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you. It was a great time.
Cheryl Nicholson is Executive Secretary of the Wisconsin Christmas Tree Producers Association. Thanks to Robin Cherry and to Cynthia Schuster for producing this program. This is the Ideas Network.